Welcome into the Sports Objective as we get you ready for college baseball. And we also have good news as the recent decision made by ECU, the Department of Athletics, to bring back, let's see, ECU women's swimming and diving and ECU women's tennis. And with us right now, my good friend and the man behind, we could call him Oz, the man behind the, so to speak. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Dave. I got a sleeping six-year-old here on my lap.
Hey, Reese. I don't think she's ever been seen on barely on camera, but now that's what she gets for sleeping on the job, so to speak. And, Bubba, I know that one of the things that we're really proud of is we have, before we get to our guest, PGX Gloves is our great sponsor. I want to give them a shout-out as they're sponsoring. Speaking of baseball, 23 Jungle Tales, I know that that's your brainchild, Bubba. Appreciate all your hard work on that. You and I have always, and so has Kyle, love baseball. And so we wanted to definitely have a great sponsor. And PGX Gloves, Bubba, they do everything, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. This afternoon, I caught up with Trey Benton, and that was the fourth volume of season two of 23 Jungle Tales. Had an excellent conversation with Trey and, you know, talking about his Pirate career, why he chose East Carolina, and just how he grew as a pitcher and just as a young man under Cliff Godwin and that staff's leadership, and talking about what he's up to now with the Cleveland Indians and getting ready for 2021 after 2020 being a wash. But excellent conversation with Trey. We've also caught up with Calvin Brown, who played back in the Coach O era there in the late 80s and 1990. And then we also have caught up with Billy Best and then also Earl Boykin. Earl Boykin was the third Jungle Tale and had an excellent conversation with him, who was a member of that 1961 NAI National Championship team. And he's also been very successful in the sporting good business there in Wilson.
Absolutely. I can personally attest to Earl Boykin being a coach at the Eastern North Carolina School for the Deaf and Wilson for four seasons. The EB Sports, they are just so great. And Earl Boykin is tremendous for Wilson and did a lot, has done a lot for local sports. They make like the help make the jerseys and screen printing and such for Wilson High School sports and Wilson, the local sports. So no doubt about that. Baseball is certainly on our minds right now. And Bubba, what a great guest, a dear friend of the show.
Yeah, anytime I have the opportunity to talk college baseball, I absolutely love it. And I'm very excited to talk with this guy after not having chatted in quite some time. Welcome back in from College Baseball 365, Stu Murray.
Well, thanks, guys. Been looking forward to this for a while now.
No doubt, Stu. We're very excited. I told you ahead of time that I'm very nervous about the baseball season. Not because of let me be very clear on that. Not because of our team. In fact, our team is great again this year, and we're going to discuss that. I'm talking about the elephant in the room, the COVID-19 situation, and I'm worried about the start date is February 19th. I'm worried about it's not like football where you had a handful of games, you know, one a week. We're talking about what I'm worried about is having series canceled. And I know Cliff Godwin is going to kill me, but that's what I'm worried about the most heading into the season.
Well, let's just keep our fingers crossed. You know, we've already been through an 11-month off season, and I really feel for the kids, you know, us as fans and us that right. Enjoy this from a distance. But these kids only get 4 years, if that. And so I just pray that we'll get through this relatively unscathed and have a great baseball season.
No doubt. They work their tails off, the coaches, players. How about all the staff that we don't even know the people's names. There's so many support staff members that really, really work hard, and I feel bad for them. But you're right, the players, at least the coaches get to come back. These players have to make difficult decisions. Not, for example, Bubba, you remember Nick Barber, a guy who played many years with the Pirates. He had an opportunity to come back. He decided not to, and for obvious reasons. And one of the reasons, I guess, is because of scholarships, and that's a whole other show. But the difficult decisions were made, you know, last year, and and one of the things that hurts Stu is the very fact is competitors. You got guys like Alec Burleson, who probably what was it above the second highest draft pick we've ever had. Help me out, you're the numbers guy.
I believe it was fourth, but yeah,
Fourth longest. Okay.
he was right up there, for sure. And Burley went in the supplemental part of the second round.
And he's the guy, he's one of the guys that I felt sorry for because we know they're not coming back. And just a lot of great guys on that team. And you can't speculate. We felt like that they would go deep in the draft. But unfortunately, we'll never know. Sorry, deep in the postseason, but we'll never know. But certainly, let's focus on this year. Going into the season, have you had a chance to look at the Pirate roster? What are your takes going in?
Wow. Well, I was fortunate enough to see two games this fall at Clark LeClaire, and I mean, there's so much to talk about here, guys. I think the first thing that strikes me is that this edition has been reloaded from the 2019 that obviously went to Louisville in the Super. Jake Washer moves on. You plug in Seth Cadell. Turner Brown moves on at shortstop. Ryder Giles fills in. Brady Lloyd gone. Connor Norby is there. Even in center field, Dusty Baker was the guy for most of those games. Bryson Worrell now is there. And so up the middle and throughout the roster, Cliff Godwin is reloading the Pirates. And at first glance, I mean, they're deep and talented and formidable.
And Bubba, one of the things that comes to mind is Stu is the very fact these guys are getting now are not only great like specialists, meaning one position, but these guys can play. Look at Burleson, for example. I think the guy can play. He could have played every single position on the field, and we're getting those guys.
Yeah, two-way guys. Ryder
Yeah.
Giles is a two-way guy.
Yes.
Skyler Brooks is a guy that I think's got a big upside. He's a two-way youngster. And so the flexibility that Cliff has to play matchups and the depth that he's going to need this season is certainly there.
No question about it. Bubba, one of the things that I know that Stu has talked about is the fans. With the ju speaking of, we were talking about Jungle Tales, but what about the jungle, Stu? What do you what's your impression of the jungle, those crazy folks out there in the outfield?
Well, it just takes the Clark LeClaire experience to another level. There aren't a whole lot of passionate outfield fan bases. Ole Miss and Swayze comes to mind, but the jungle is, it's 5, 6, 7, 8 deep. It's intimidating, but it's fun, and it just complements what I think is one of the best settings on the East Coast of any college baseball environment.
That's
But
saying a
by
lot
the way,
because you've come around it.
I love the ballpark. And one thing I think is underrated about it is the massive grandstand you have over the third base dugout. When that thing is full, it is a wall of sound and intimidating. And I think you guys should nickname that something because it's really an underrated part of that
Rosenbaum Row or something, because his
ballpark.
dad. Stu, you have to meet his dad, Gary. He does, speaking of jungle, he does jungle calls and they're hilarious. I got a chance to experience that at a basketball game. I had never heard anything like it. It really caught me off guard, but it's hilarious. I love Gary. He's a great guy.
And it's funny, Dave. You give my dad so much credit for that jungle call. Waylon Summerlin, who is
Oh, yeah.
a
Waylon.
loyal listener and viewer of
Love
ours.
Waylon.
Waylon's jungle call definitely, outweighs my dad, in my opinion.
I can't wait to hear. I love Waylon. I can't wait to hear. I haven't heard Waylon do it, but I'm sure he's a great pirate. I'm sure it's great.
But kind of going back to the depth, Stu, I was looking at it earlier today, and these are things that I knew, but when you see them on paper, then it's just mind-boggling. With guys not losing a year of eligibility last year, to think that you have going around the horn, you have Zach Agnos and Alex Makarevich at third base. Those guys are going to be freshmen again. You have Ryder Giles at shortstop, who was taken over for a 4-year starter in Turner Brown, and through 17 games last year, 51 chances, did not commit an error, just remarkable. And then Connor Norby at second base, who had just committed 1 E in 69 chances. And then Thomas Francisco at first base. Obviously, Burley was someone that he had played a little first base at times as well. I mean, you got so many options. Skyler Brooks, and you have him at 6'2", 215 or 20 pounds. There, and just so many options up and down the roster, both positionally and on the mound.
Well, I think the cornerstone of this lineup is Bryson Worrell in center field. This guy tantalized us through the 16, 17 games last year. You know, hit 373, but he's physical. He's fast. He's got tools. And if he just puts one layer of polish on his game, he's going to be a top five rounder, I think for sure. Switch hitter, lots of power. The Thomas Francisco bat is one of my
Nice.
favorites. He owns the zone. He's really disciplined. He's patient. And he drives the ball to gaps. And I think he's going to be a real cornerstone. I'll tell you, a kid that really jumps out to me is Seth Cadell. This guy is a stud behind the plate. He's got really good pop times. Opponents last year just ran 10 times on him, which just shows you that he shuts down the running game by his mere presence. He homered in the game that I saw. I know he does a great job handling pitchers. And I think Seth Cadell is one of the underrated backstops in college baseball today.
No question about it, and Cliff knows all about that. And certainly, with we were talking before, I'm really impressed, Stu. I wanted to ask you as far as one of the things that people always talk about: Omaha, Omaha, Omaha. One of the things I think that you need for Omaha, which is stating the obvious, is pitching. Our pitching, I think, is some of the. And Bubba's been following the program longer than I have. I came in 1986, pretty close, but. It seems like our pitching is the best it's been in a while or ever in our history.
Well, I'm not going to argue that point at all. And you look at, Jake Kuchmaner and what he did 2 years ago, I think is historic. He went, everyone knows the perfect game, but his two outings before that, both on the road at Ole Miss and at Duke, he was equally lights out. He went 23 innings and gave up two hits in those three road games. And this is a bulldog, a kid who, is not super toolsy in terms of his stuff, but he gets it done. And I think he's just a perfect guy to lead a long weekend series. He's only going to get better. To me, Gavin Williams is really the key. If he could ever get healthy, the stuff is there. The command, I think, is underrated. And he's got, high top 3 or 4 round potential there if he can just stay healthy. I know Jason Dietrich, pretty well, a good friend of mine, the pitching coach there. If anybody can figure out Gavin Williams, it's Jason Dietrich. And when he does, you're going to have something really, really special to complement Kuchmaner.
Yeah,
And
he's looking
Gavin
at
Williams.
like upper 90s, maybe. Sometimes the radar gun has got him over 100, hasn't it, Bubba? Or right at
Oh,
100 miles
yeah.
an hour.
I remember when we saw Gavin Williams hit triple digits for the first time against the Tar Heels back in 2018 at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. I mean, I don't know if it's Kendall Rogers or, Aaron Fitt, one of the D1 baseball guys was retweeting it, and you can imagine the number of retweets it got in a hurry. But yeah, Stu, you talk about Gavin Williams, 6'6", and like Dave says, has heat, and he's becoming a pitcher, having those complimentary pitches. And then Jake Kuchmaner, we touched on him. Tyler Smith, he's a very experienced guy, and I've heard he had an excellent fall.
Well, he really found it. I mean, the guy's 18-3 in his career there. I think Jason Dietrich really did some good work with Tyler Smith because he's now missing bats. You look at his first 2 or 3 years there, he was more of a pitchability guy, but now he's missing bats, and the velo has ticked up. So you've got him. You've got a guy that I saw. He started one of the games there in the fall is C.J. Mayhew. He's a sleeper, a lefty, a pitchability guy, but a competitor. He pounds the zone. He was really good last year as a true freshman, particularly against Ole Miss in that Clark LeClair game. He came in for 3 innings in relief and whiffed 6 Ole Miss Rebels, which is really saying something. I think he's going to play a big role. And my breakout guy is a lefty named Carson Wisenhunt. He started one of the games I saw. He retired the first 12 batters he faced. He's got everything you look for. He's about 6'3", a lefty, great body at about 200 pounds. He touched 94, very athletic. And he looks to me like he could be the next great breakout pitcher for the Pirates.
Looks like what do you guys think? There's about, in my opinion, and both of y'all follow baseball maybe closer. I know both of y'all do. As much as I love baseball, there's always that person that follows you closer. I'm looking at right now in my off the top of my head, six guys that can start for the Pirates. What do you guys think?
That makes sense to me. I mean, Kuchmaner, Smith, Williams, Wisenhunt, Mayhew, and you got guys like Saylor, Carter Spivey. I mean, the arms are endless. I think the challenge is, how do you work your weekend rotations in the American Conference, which is going to those four-game weekends now with a doubleheader most likely on Saturday? It's going to be roles and how Cliff and Jason get the staff in shape and deploy those arms strategically at the right time and the right matchups. If they do that well, this is going to be one of the best staffs on the East Coast.
Yeah, Stu, you bring up Garrett Saylor, and he was off to a tremendous start last year. And he was 3-0 and had an ERA of less than one. And then you had guys like Matt Bridges coming off an injury. He had been very good, opponents hitting less than 200 against him in seven appearances. And then you had Cam Colmore, who had just been lights out. Opponents were only hitting 105 against him in six appearances and 12 and a third innings of work, and he had not allowed a single run.
Yeah, I saw Colmore, really liked him. He's got a lot of movement on his ball, a little bit of funk in his delivery. Obviously, really experienced. And we were talking about this day before we went live, is the need for middle relief. And I mean, he's a guy that can give you those two or three key innings as a bridge guy, particularly maybe on a Sunday when the staff is a bit worn out. He's going to be really big in those situations.
And you're talking about as far as the For me, what's the reason I mentioned middle relief is we've Bubba, I was saying before we did, w before pre-show is very fact. It's always we've seemed to have a decent or good or really good, starting rotation, and it seems like the middle relief. It's not like we're the only program. I mean, Major League Baseball middle relief seems to be a problem at times, but right now, I mean, to make it to Omaha, we have the arms. I think the question will be health. And obviously the bats, how do we swing the bats? Because I feel like our arms are definitely there to do it.
Well, it's very interesting. You look at Cliff Godwin's 6 years there in Greenville, and in scoring, in terms of the national rank in scoring, they've gotten better every single year. So he figures out how to score runs. They have a high on base average. I'm confident. I think this position group is actually a little bit underrated. I think you're going to look at Josh Moylan, probably the plum recruit this year. Looks right now as a 19-year-old kid, looks like Spencer Brickhouse was when he left. I mean, he's already filled out, and he could play a big role as a left-handed bat, a power bat, and a first baseman toward the end of the year. We talked about Francisco. I'll tell you, Lane Hoover, as the Pirate offense goes, Lane Hoover is going to have a lot to say about that as a leadoff guy, good speed. If he can find a way to get on base a little bit more often, he's really going to be a table setter. You got other guys like Christian Smallwood, Zach Agnos, we talked about. He had a really big fall with the bat. Skylar Brooks has a ton of talent. I'm perhaps a little bit more bullish on their position guys and their offense than some other folks.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Stu. And taking a look at the offense, last year, the Pirates, it was a bit of a struggle early on trying to find themselves offensively while the pitching and defense really led the way. But right that week or so on that Charlotte series, which I was able to attend all three of those ball games, and then obviously the games after that, the midweek games before things got shut down following the loss down at UNC Wilmington. The Pirates were really starting to swing the bats, and you had guys like you've already mentioned, Seth Cadell. Seth Cadell was really coming into his own. He was really driving the ball down at Charlotte. I want to say maybe hit for the series cycle, and you had guys like that really showing some pop. Thomas Francisco, we know what he can do. He was batting well over 400 when things got shut down after 17 games.
I'll tell you, another kid is Connor Norby. I mean, he's all preseason AAC as voted by the coaches, filling in for Brady Lloyd. He stepped in, he hit over 400. He smoked a home run in one of the fall games I saw. He can run, he's physical. I mean, this kid is going to be a household name, I think, this year in Greenville. And so there's so much to like about this, but I'll tell you one thing about these position guys, they will defend. One thing, you look at Cliff Godwin's teams, they always play defense, and this is no exception. Last year, they led the nation in fielding at 990. You talked about Giles and Norby up the middle, one error between them. Worrell can go get it in center field, and like we said about Cadell, I think he's a tremendous backstop. So they're going to be really strong up the middle defensively. I think it's a complete club. I think some keys for me is Gavin Williams. We talked about him. If he can really find his potential, he's going to be a huge boost. I think a guy like Zach Agnos, if he really finds it offensively, he can defend at third. If he finds it offensively, he could really be a key. And then like we talked about Josh Moylan, the freshman big left-handed bopper, if he can find it toward the end of this season, come postseason, this is going to be a formidable lineup.
Certainly one of the things that I'm very excited about is ECU, like other programs, has now announced the schedule because of COVID-19, the delay in announcing, releasing the schedule, if you will. Have you had a chance to look at the schedule? And if you have, what really pops, what really stands out to you?
Well, it's not the toughest schedule that they've had in the past. I think there are probably some limitations there. They start with Rhode Island to open it up. That's actually a pretty good program up in the Northeast. App State comes to town. Charlotte comes to town for series. Illinois State is a tough Midwestern team that I think will surprise people. And then St. John's comes in, who has a reputation of being a very physical, intimidating team. So I think the home schedule maybe is a little bit underrated, but it's not going to help you a whole lot with RPI. So the midweeks they have, they got a home and home with North Carolina and a home and home with Duke. I think showing really well in those four games is going to help because they're going to have to win some games this year and rely a little bit less on a high RPI based on a tough schedule.
Yeah, Steve, kind of piggybacking off what you're saying regarding the schedule, the Keith LeClair Classic weekend, the Pirates will play a three-game series with App State. And while that is very exciting because Kermit Smith and Britt Johnson and that staff are doing a tremendous job of building that program, they're still not to the point where they want to be in terms of RPI. And, you lose some RPI games there with Long Beach State not being able to make it and also Ohio State.
Yeah, that Long Beach State series would have been really something. That's a really good classic Southern California program. So they're going to have to, they're going to have to win 40 plus games to get that RPI and, in the 30 range or so, or even higher. There's no question they can do that. And I think for this schedule, the key is building this roster, knowing roles and playing your best baseball come May. I think that's the key for this schedule and this roster.
And by the way, fans that are just tuning in, we're going to have, we're going to have folks from the ECU, Save ECU swimming and diving. The women's team is coming back, so we'll have them in the matter of minutes. They're backstage in the green room, if you will. And so we're looking forward to having them. Thanks so much for them to come back on and celebrate it. We have so far the women's team back and hopefully the men's team very, very soon. We were talking about the ACC, Stu. I want to shift gears. We were talking about East Carolina and the American. Let's talk now with the AAC, the rest of the conference. How do you feel about that? And we're also going to talk the ACC as well.
Yeah, so the American Conference, historically, it's been, I think it's actually should have been a Power Five in the classic definition. You know, UConn departs, which leaves a bit of a hole, but Wichita State, I think, made a great hire, and that program is on the upswing. Obviously, a storied program there. I don't think there's a whole lot of outstanding ball clubs there, but there are some tremendous players that are going to come to Clark LeClair. Two guys I'm familiar with. One is Hunter Goodman, the catcher from Memphis. He's all preseason AEC. Saw him on the Cape. This guy, I'll tell you, the people out in left field there on batting practice, he's going to shower you with baseballs. And the other guy you're going to see on a Friday night is a kid from Tulane, who I think is going to be one of the top draft picks perhaps this coming year. He's really special. Olthoff is the kid's name. He's the preseason pitcher of the year. Those are two really good ball players and high draft picks that are going to be coming to Clark LeClaire in the conference season.
Last year, when things got shut down, Stu, the Pirates were about to head down to Orlando for what was really going to be a huge series with UCF. What can you tell us about the Knights?
Well, I can tell you that Greg Lovelady does a fantastic job down there. They're probably the second best team in the conference. They're going to be deep again. They always pitch it. He's really an up and coming coach, Greg Lovelady there. So I think that's probably the series to watch, and you're going to get them at home as well, which is great. So mark your calendars, April 23rd and 25th, when UCF comes to town.
Are there any dark horses, any teams that will surprise us folks? Maybe they're not known nationally, but certainly a team that could unfortunately beat the Pirates and win the conference?
Well, I think Wichita State is a team to circle. Everyone knows the tradition they've had. They've been through a dry spell, but they had a good recruiting class. They brought one of their old players back as the head coach at Wichita State. And I think that's going to be a tough trip for the Pirates there in late April to go down to Wichita. So I'd actually look at that program as one to watch.
And shifting gears to the ACC now with one of the best conferences, of course, in all of college baseball. Who do you like this year? We'll have our D1, North Carolina D1 baseball preview that has some of, obviously, Tobacco Road. But who do you like in the ACC, Stu?
Well, Louisville's the trendy pick. They actually lose quite a bit. They lose Reed Detmers and Bobby Miller to premium arms. They lose a couple key veterans in the field, but Dan McDonald just reloads. So Louisville's going to be formidable. Miami's got one of the top position groups in the country. They just happened to lose the best starting rotation in the country last year, so they're going to have some arms to fill. I think NC State here is a sleepy good team. Elliott Event always does a good job. They've got some star power there. Luca Tresh, Tyler McDonald, first baseman Austin Murr. They always pitch it there. Wake is going to be really good. One can consider them having one of the best pitching staffs in the ACC, led by Ryan Cusick. So I think Wake is going to be a team to watch. There's just so much depth. I think you probably look at Louisville and Miami in my mind, and then you throw a blanket around five or six other teams that could really make some serious noise.
Dave, taking a look at the D1 baseball poll that was released on Monday, January 18th, and the ACC is only behind the SEC in terms of teams in the poll, and they have 9 SEC teams and 7 ACC, and then you have 5 Big 12. So that means the Pirates are at 25th, and the Pirates are 13th in some polls. But in that D1 baseball poll, ECU is 25th and one of only 4 teams that are not in the SEC, ACC, or Big 12. Those other 3 being UCLA and Arizona out of the Pac-12, of course, and then also UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, you look at North Carolina, the big programs here, Wake, Duke, UNC, NC State, and, of course, the Pirates. And I would actually put – I think it's difficult to separate Wake, ECU, and NC State, but I would put that group ahead of the other two, Duke and UNC. I think – Mike Fox had such a great run at UNC. I think the timing might have been right for him to step down. I think UNC is deep, but they don't have the star power. They lose Aaron Sabato, which is a huge bat. So this could be kind of somewhat of a down year, to the extent that they have down years at Chapel Hill. But I think I think them and Duke may actually be the 4 and 5 in terms of the top 5 here in the state.
No question about it. And Stu, obviously, I'd love to have you back on if we can next month before the season actually starts. But this is kind of like a hot stove league kind of thing for us as getting ready for college baseball. I think one of the most underrated sports in all of America is college baseball. If you look at the fandom and you look at all the quality of play, for sure. Stu, how can people find your work?
Yeah, so my website is collegebaseball365.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Stu, STU_Murray1. That's MURRAY. And I want to applaud you guys for all that you do for college baseball, and certainly focusing on the Carolina program. But the sport is growing tremendously every year. Let's hope we get a full and somewhat normal season and have a great long trip to Omaha.
Love to have you back on. Maybe we could do a whole show with you to break down the conferences, because you do such a great job, and appreciate all your great work there on College Baseball 365.
Well, thanks as always, guys. I look forward to catching up down the road.
All right, Stu, appreciate you, buddy, very much, and don't be a stranger. All right, very excited to have Stu on, and we were just talking about the storied program in baseball, and now a familiar face we're having back on, and I'm glad it's great news. I'm glad to see your smile, Lizzie Takuda in the hair with us, and what a journey. You know, we were not allowed to go to Kings Dominion, Disney World, anything because of COVID, but we got a roller coaster back in May, and I think this time it's a more of a fun ride. What do you think? There we I think Lindsay's got hey, Randy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. We lost Lindsay. We'll see if we can get – there we go. We got you back. There you go. I was saying I was going to let you answer that question. What do you think about that, the very fact that back in May we lose both men's and women's swimming? We did get some good news recently of getting the women's team back, and we'll talk about the men's team in just a little bit. But let's celebrate. Let's celebrate a success here and one of our wins of getting the women's team back.
Yeah, absolutely. We had an alumni call on Sunday. It was just great to see, you know, a lot of alumni's faces from all decades, going back to the 60s up to our current swimmers. I know Randy was on the call. And so just to be able to come together and rejoice a little bit, because previous to that, obviously, it had been a hard going of it over the last couple months. And, you know, obviously, following the July decision at the Board of Trustees meeting, it was a really tough couple months there trying to figure out, you know, what we can do next and what our steps were. And then it was just great. You know, our heroines of the day stepped up and said, you know what? We'd like to fight for our right to continue to be Pirates. So, you know, as alumni, we just were applauding them and their bravery. It's not easy to do that, to take it on. And we were just so thankful that they did. And they are now, you know, our saviors of ECU, you know, women's swimming. So really, really excited, thankful, but recognizing our journey is now only half done. The victory is only half won. So, but it's a big one.
Randy, I applaud you ladies, because I was really happy with the fact that there'll be a lot of people, especially in the COVID world we live in, that's things with that virus has been so defeating, but we're Pirates. I'm really proud of you ladies for fighting hard. That's what, I mean, you lived up to the mascot. That's what Pirates do. We fight. And one of the reasons I've always been proud of our university is our mascot, and you definitely lived up to it.
Thank you.
Let's talk about ladies program, and we're going to talk about the men's in just a little bit, but ladies first, as they say. Mm-hmm. As far as the program is concerned, let's talk now. Okay, so we have the program back. What comes next? You ladies help me out on that, whoever wants to take it.
So as far as we know, they're going to start. The first thing they want to do is find a coach and hire, and then after that we should be able to start practicing. They said, obviously, there's only four of us here now that were still on the team, so probably wouldn't be able to compete until fall. But hopefully, we'll be able to start getting back in the pool soon.
Yeah, I know a coach that could coach the team. we have had him on the show. yeah. But hopefully he will come back for sure. But as far as one question I have, and I'm not trying to be controversial because we're celebrating this, but there was talk of, and help me out on this, so maybe my memory is not as good as it used to be, but as far as the facilities, what needs to be upgraded? We're talking about that losing the program, and that was brought up about facilities. So was it just the locker rooms? Because the pool, from what I've seen, looks fantastic.
So it is, in order to compete and continue as a team, you don't need to do anything. The pool is within regulation. And all that. The locker rooms 100% are in need of a facelift, and they have been for years. They haven't been touched since the pool was really, I don't think since the pool was made. So yes, could the locker rooms use a bit of an upgrade? Absolutely. Does that have to happen in order for the team to be allowed to compete? No. But I think as the school moves forward, you know, we also need to recognize that this wasn't just a win for women's swimming and diving. Women's tennis is coming back as well, which is huge. And I mean, in general, if you look at North Carolina, it's a huge win for women in sport in North Carolina to now have a school like ECU to have these programs back. That's a big thing for female athletes here in the state and across the country. So, you know, that's the big thing. I think all the things as far as facility upgrades and all that, I think that's going to come in the coming months. You know, with Title IX, there's different ways to meet and qualify for that. And, you know, there's three different prongs that require different aspects and different things that need to be done. So, you know, and this ECU is going to hire someone to help them. As far as I know, they will be hiring someone to walk them through it. And hopefully, you know, we just want them to meet those, one of those, and make sure that they're in compliance and providing that equal and fair opportunity for our female athletes. If that includes an upgrade to the locker rooms, I think that is much needed. And would be helpful, but that pool is ready to be swum in, the, you know, as of yesterday. So and always has been. So I think, you know, right now the next big steps is securing a coach and kind of those administrative positions that need to be put in place in order for those female athletes who are remaining to come back and start training again. So.
You made a great point. I have a boy and a girl, and my son Alexander and my daughter Mackenzie. And you know, if you ask me which one is my favorite child, obviously they're, you know, both of them are equal. And for that reason, the reason I bring that up is I want my son to have, and my daughter to have, the equal chance that he does. And she wants to be, both of them do, but she always emphasizes that she wants to be a pirate like her daddy. And I would love, I don't know if she's D1 talent. She's only 6 years old, but you know what I'm saying? Like the fact that they would have an opportunity. So Randy, thank you for doing that, because my daughter has been saying that for the last few years, that she wants to be a pirate. And she was born into being a pirate, and I'll be happy wherever she goes. I want her to be happy, but I hope that she will. And same with my son, that they'll go to East Carolina. Speaking of coaches, do you think, I'll put you both on the spot. Do you think Coach Jabs will come back? I've been wanted to ask that question all along. So
I think he would love to come back. I would love him to come back. Hopefully he does.
Coach, we'd love to have you back. So
yeah, you can't replace the history and love. And I mean, Jabs has bled purple and gold for, you know, such a long time now, as a athlete, as, you know, an assistant coach, and now as a head coach. And I can't think of anyone who would be best suited to get this girls team underway once again. So hopefully we're all just kind of waiting and seeing. So we'll see.
Speaking of coaches, Coach, I know that Coach Kobe, that he couldn't be here tonight. I know he's got a, what's his mood like? I know that a guy like him, that he had such a long time. I mean, he was coaching when I was there, and even way before I was there, actually. Yeah. Okay, before, but what is he? I know he's got to be ecstatic right now.
Absolutely, he is. He is just really thrilled, like the rest of us, super excited, but you know, understanding that our victory is only half won. But yeah, you know, for him, he has such a legacy. He's a Hall of Fame, ECU Hall of Fame coach. And I think for him, it's, I mean, that, you know, ECU, that was. It, you know, his life all those years. And so I think for all of our former coaches, him and Coach Scharf, I mean, that was hard to watch something that you gave your entire life to for all those years just be cut in that way. So I think for him, it was probably meant something different for him than even for us as the athletes. And so it's just, he's really in high spirits and excited, and is ready to keep working as well. And, you know, we're hopeful that down the road that we will be able to, you know, bring our men back and that they'll be able to continue their legacy that they've had for all this time. So
Let's talk about that very thing, and we'll talk both men's and women's now. But as far as the men's team is concerned, Randy, have you heard from some of your teammates on the men's side? Would they be willing to come back? I know that my memory serves me right. There were some that are they still enrolled? Are they still waiting to see if they can get the men's team back?
We have more boys here that were on the team than girls, and I'm not sure if all of them would come back. I know a couple that I think would if they were given the opportunity, hopefully. And they were just as happy for us, I think, because at first I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't want to like be too excited around them, but they were like just as happy as they should have been, and it was really awesome. So I think they would love to come back if they had the chance.
Let's talk about that very thing. So we'll talk about some other things, women's coming up. As far as the men is concerned, I know that you did, Lindsay, so I'll put this to you. You did a great video the other day. Obviously, I'm a member on the Facebook page for Save ECU Swim and Dive. And you made a great point that obviously I hadn't thought about in several months, but the point about the men's team, you've already got a coach. You got coaches, so you will have them because you have the women's team. You don't need dual coaches. That's something that you already have the coaches in place. You already have the facilities in place. Basically, it seems like it comes down to me. All you need is to get the team together recruiting wise, right?
So, yeah, I mean, your overheads to start with are covered. And with the size of the team that it's going to be, it is going to be small. So, I mean, your overhead costs to bring both back don't change. You're already paying them. From if I'm looking at it from an ECU standpoint and cost, you know, whether the scholarships or this or that, I mean, all that is things that you can iron out, and it's not a necessity. We just, you know, our goal right now is going to be to, you know, keep pushing and encouraging and try to just get our guys back in the water in my opinion, no extra cost to the school, because you're already having to pay those now that the women are back. So I think it's just one point, yeah, to just keep in mind that it doesn't necessarily have to be more expensive to do that. So, I mean, there's a lot of angles to look at. I mean, people are strapped. The pandemic has created, you know, financial problems all across the country for businesses, schools, everywhere, families, home budgets. I mean, so understanding all of that, but really a lot of the overhead costs are already there. So why not just bring this team back and let us work from there? Let us as an alumni do our work and do our part to raise money, join the Pirate Club, support the Pirate Club, to create those funds that can go towards then, you know, sponsoring our men's team eventually. But, you know, right now, your overheads are there. So just let them come back, even if there are no scholarships at the moment. Give them that right to compete.
Go ahead.
It's also good to know that, and I think a misconception is simply because the women's swimming, diving, and tennis have been brought back on a Title IX, it does not mean men's sports cannot be added. It does not close that. It does not stop that in any way, shape, or form. It just means that the school needs to take those steps to ensure they are providing the equal opportunity and equal resources and just equality. So that doesn't mean men can't be added. So, you know, I've had a number of alumni who weren't necessarily in the beginning happy with a Title IX suit because they thought it would stop and put all into a men's team ever coming back. And the great thing about it is that's actually just not true from a Title IX perspective. Finances is a whole nother thing, but as far as Title IX is concerned, it wouldn't stop any men's team from being brought back. And that's a really, really big point to get across to people.
No doubt. We were talking about great coaches. I want to bring in now. I know she's at Washington State. I would love to have her in Greenville and the purple and gold, but happy for her at Washington State. Kate Moore. Kate, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing? Sorry, I'm late. Just got back from practice.
No. We were actually running behind ourselves starting the show. So things always work out. And so glad to have you on. Honor. Think a lot of you. And certainly Coach Jabs. Just wanted to bring you in and get your reaction. I know, like we said, you're on the left coast now. And certainly at Washington State. But I know you got to be happy for the program that we get the ladies. At least we got half the job done with the ladies. We'll take ladies first, and then we'll get the men back.
Yeah, no, I'm just so happy for the program. You know, obviously this whole thing has been, there's been a lot of frustrations with everything, and just to be able to have the program back and actually to have a reason now to go back to Greenville, I think is probably the one thing I'm most excited about. You know, when I left Greenville to make that 3,000 mile drive across, you know, across the country, I wasn't sure, like, you know, what would ever bring me back there. But now that there's a team, you know, there's a reason to come back and obviously support them and, you know, have a little bit more pride in the Pirates again.
Am I hearing you right? Does that mean you would come back to Greenville?
I mean, I'm just glad I have there's a reason now to come back. You know, before I was like, well, there's never going to be, you know, why would we ever have an alumni event or anything like that with no team? And now that there is a team, you know, I'm excited that, you know, now I'll have reason to go back and see my teammates and see the girls swim and hopefully the guys at some point. But so I'm excited.
It's a great start. And Kate, I want to ask you, and obviously Randy too, being a swimmer as well. I know Lindsay, you can help out too with recruiting. Talk about that, Kate. How hard is it? I was in a situation at a high school level where we stopped a program in football and it took us 4 years to recover from it. And that was on a small scale. I can't imagine that was a different sport, different level, I understand. But just people don't understand when you stop a program, it's going to take time to recover. Do you? I won't put a timetable on it, but how hard do you think it's going to be to recover, whoever the coach is and recruiting? And can you help us out from that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take time. You know, I think the team will get back to a very, very competitive level. I mean, we were, you know, I would say before the team got cut, we were about a class or two away from contending for the championship. And the team that has won the last 4 years, Houston, I mean, they're a top 25 program. So, you know, we were on the rise for sure. So, you know, it's unfortunate. Now we have to kind of start all over again. You know, it'll take time, but it'll get there. So I really hope that, you know, the, you know, Pirate Nation will support these girls and support this team. And you know, I don't know if you got, I can't remember from the last time we were on this, if you guys had been to meets before, but I mean, they're really exciting. You know, we had that place packed, and I think if we can, you know, if they can get that place rocking like that again, you know, recruits will come and, you know, it'll get there. It'll take a little time.
Yeah, certainly. And that very thing about the men's team, I wanted to ask you guys, for you ladies, if you can help me, because you've been on the inside. Obviously, I've been a fan from the outside. And certainly now that we've had you on the show, we're going to be even closer and closer. Don't know what you got till it's gone. That cliche, hate to use it, but it's true. You just automatically think because the swim and dive program has such a story program that's going to be here forever. And we found out how quickly that can be taken away. So we're going to appreciate it more. But when it comes down to the program for the men, how do we, let's talk about that elephant in the room. How do we get the men's program back? Not to take away from the victory of the women's program, which we're very happy that's been reinstated.
I think the first thing is to be able to have a chance for dialogue, which is something we haven't had up to this point. So we're really hoping that with the women coming back and you know, maybe in a spirit of, you know, I don't know, togetherness and pirate love, like just be able to start, have a dialogue and begin that to find a road that works. Again, as I said before, we understand different constraints that the school are under and, you know, that everyone is going through. But I think right now to hopefully just begin with a conversation. I don't know, Kate, if you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, you know, if the, especially with the girls now coming back, just, you know, getting as many of those alumni on board, back on board with, you know, supporting the university. And, you know, we did have a lot of alum that were very active in the Pirate Club and, you know, did give back. And obviously this put a bad taste in their mouth. So we got to reel them back in. And, you know, I think there was kind of a misconception that, you know, our group wasn't very active, you know, alumni. And that's, you know, unfortunately, it's just not true. Or fortunately, that is not true, because, you know, I think it'll be a lot easier to get people back in and get people involved. So I think just having that support from our alumni, you know, moving forward. And, you know, if we have this, you know, a large amount of support with just the women, then just imagine how much we'd have with the men. So with both teams. So I think just kind of showing that is going to be a big deal as well.
Yes. Amen. That was in our alumni call on Sunday. That was the one. There's two myths we wanted to get rid of. One, that no, the men's team isn't sunk because it was a Title IX win. And two, that the Pirate Club over the years have supported East Houston Women Diving all the way. They provided the scholarships that were needed to help make the team successful and to bring the kids in to help make the team successful. So their support has always been there. We have had conversations with some members that said it would have been nice for that to be publicized. So even as an athlete, that I would have known and could have appreciated it more when I was there. And then as an alumni, to know that, so that I've felt that pride of wanting to then be a part of that. And by being a part of the Pirate Club, we were in fact supporting our swimming and dive, you know, men and women swimming and diving. So at this point, we are, you know, really asking, especially all of our Lady Buck alumni, sign back up, get on board with the Pirate Club. That's the best way right now for you to support our women swimming. It's the best way for us to show what decades worth of alumni can do when they're behind you as far as support and contributing and becoming members. So, you know, this is a call to any of our alumni watching. We want you to sign up, but to make sure when you sign up, there's always that comment section. So to put in there, you know, your name and your years that you were on and that you are a swimming and diving alumni, because we do want to make sure that we are accounted for and that we don't miss anyone, you know, being known. We want everyone to know that we are the alumni of the team. So, yeah, we are. We're just, that's our push right now. And for us, we feel that's the biggest way we can show our support to the school and show our thanks and gratitude. I mean, I know you didn't have a choice, but we're still thankful. So, and thankful for the decisions that will come that will help just create that equal opportunity for our girls. And hopefully in the future, like I said, then be able to bring our men back. So,
no doubt. Randy, I was going to ask you as a student, how can we support you and how can we make it where, what I'm thinking of is if we come out and drove fans that we're going to find a way to at least come to one or two meets, even our busy schedule, those of us having to work crazy hours or even right now with COVID, how can we support you? Maybe when doing that, we can also not only help you guys and ladies rather, and we can help the guys bring their program back as well.
Well, Lindsay was telling me in the alumni meeting the other night about how the Pirate Club does impact scholarships and everything, which I also didn't know. And I don't think I appreciated enough the Pirate Club, but now donating to that will always help. And the support we've seen from our alumni just pushing for us and for future generations just shows it. I was blown away by the support the whole time, like even now. It's crazy. So,
yeah, no doubt. I think showing up when they have those meets, you know, it is going to be the little engine that could, you know, those first, you know, couple seasons that we're back. I know Randy's a junior, so she's going to be in her senior year of school. But, you know, we've got to start somewhere. But just to let them know, no matter how small they are, you know, that we're there and supporting them and ready to, you know, ride the high seas with them. So I think just showing up and being support, if we're allowed to, I mean, hopefully by that time we're allowed to be in the stands. But I think the best way we can is just to show our pirate pride and be there cheering them on. Yeah. So,
and I can't tell you how many exciting meets we've had at Minji's. I mean, that place gets packed every meet in the past. I mean, and it was, I mean, there's been times where I know Jabs has said he's been nervous to measure the pool because people swim so fast there. And I think a lot of it is because the energy that we've gotten from the supporters and just the energy that place can hold. So I think, like Lindsay said, just showing up and, you know, to me, it can be fun. I mean, we've had the Minji's Maniacs in there, you know, multiple times. We've had, we've had people actually out in the parking lot tailgating before meets. And I mean, you know, it's a fun atmosphere, especially if the crowd's into it, which it usually is. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's the biggest thing is just, you know, go to those meets. There's not many of them. There's usually, you know, two or three a year home meets. So,
Kate, I want to ask you as far as, and maybe Lindsay and Randy, y'all can help me too. Financially, as far as scholarships, how much money do we need to raise for the ladies for scholarships? If you're looking at Pirate Club, or there's another idea I had, I'll throw out to you guys. Maybe you've already discussed it, but let's start there. How much money would you need for how many scholarships can you have?
Yeah, so on the girls' side, you can have 14 scholarships. Now, you know, because especially with the way these girls were brought back. You know, the Pirate Club, I mean, they'll have to cover those scholarships. So while, you know, we don't necessarily have to raise that money in order for them to get those scholarships because, you know, without them giving them the scholarships, then, you know, that would also be going against that Title IX case. So, you know, there's not necessarily a particular amount of money that we need to raise in order for them to have the scholarships. But obviously, we're going to continue to push for our alumni to, you know, donate to obviously the Pirate Club. And then, you know, there may be things that we need down the road that the alumni can contribute to specifically. You know, Minji's is a beautiful pool. It's older, but I know there's a lot of misconceptions that they needed a ton of work. You know, it really doesn't. I would say locker rooms are probably the one thing that it could truly use an update on. But other than that, it's a beautiful facility, and you know, there's not a whole lot that it needs. So, you know, we're going to continue to obviously donate to the Pirate Club. And then, you know, maybe there's going to be those one or two things that as a alumni, we start raising money for, so we can, address.
Yeah.
That was one thing I was going to ask you ladies, the very fact baseball, for example, I know the policy, I believe, and help me out, Kate, because you've coached there, but you can have one fundraiser a year, and baseball has coming up the 13th, I think it's coming up. That Saturday night they have a baseball banquet. Mm-hmm. Why not? I know we live in a COVID world, but why not? We sell tickets. I'll help you, obviously, any way I can, promotion wise. I do a radio show 5 days a week on Magic 95.9. But I would love to do something like that to help out the program, and I'll definitely be there and however I can help out. But I think we could raise a lot of money to help out the ladies, and I didn't know anything about the locker rooms. If I had known about that, we would have made a push earlier. But now that we do know, it would be nice to let's raise some money for the locker rooms. Let's have any problems.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, and that's something too that, you know, we'll have, like, I know in the past we've wanted to, you know, we wanted to, you know, be able to raise money for certain things, but we were not given that, we're not able to, not because we didn't want to, but because, the school didn't want us doing it. I don't know why. So I know that there had been some changes in the last year, that there was going to be some room for people to be able to donate to certain causes. So hopefully that is kind of the way they're continuing to go. But with the previous administration, they would not allow us to do that. And that was one of the reasons why we didn't. So, I think they didn't want it, you know, taking money away from other things. So, you know, I do think that has somewhat changed since the new crowd has come in. So hopefully that's something that we can do something along those lines.
Yeah, wow. I think just in addition to that, I think what all of this, these last 9 months has done is really help us as alumni become just more mobilized and in touch and organized and just ready to start doing more things like that and to support the team and their efforts better from an alumni perspective. And to just, we now have kind of the tools in place to do that. I mean, before all this, we were not, I mean, Jabs would send out an email every now, you know, I can't remember, probably be so angry if he's watching. I can't remember how often he would send them, but we'd get email updates a couple times a year as far as how the team was doing. And that was about it. Now we have such a bigger platform. We are in touch with so many more people, and it's really just given us a great start to putting something more formal in place so that as we now continue, like you said, Dave, you know, we can start doing more things like that and having more involvement and having different events that we can get people together, you know, and so things like that. So a blessing of all this is it's really given us a chance as alumni to get our act together and communicate and start coming together, you know, as one Pirate Nation and being able to support our team. And so, yeah, I think, you know, watch this space. And yeah, hopefully we'll be able to, in the future, continue to be a positive, you know, support for our women's team, you know, initially, and hopefully for the men's as well.
We're going to make it. We'll make it happen. We're Pirates. Randy, I want to thank you for your courage. All the ladies said maybe there's a movie that can be made. Somebody out there writing. We know some people that can write a screenplay that are former Pirates. So I'll just leave it at that. But Kate, thanks to you too for all your hard work. I know that you worked really hard behind the scenes. We have no idea the hours that you put in on the road and scouting and recruiting and coaching and all that you've done. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Lindsay, thank you for all the hard work you've done for the movement. It's been tremendous. We're lucky that we have a platform that we, you guys can come on and we'll do anything we can. And I hope that we have that big fundraiser. I'd love to meet all of y'all in person and certainly definitely with the meets. I had my second shot today. Everybody get vaccinated. I felt like my dad's a veterinarian. So I usually say that about animals, but now everybody needs to get vaccinated. So we can have our fans back at Minji's, whatever sport, whatever thing that you do is being definitely limited right now because of COVID. Before we let you ladies go, do you want to have one final word? We're unfortunately running out of time. I hate it, but we'll definitely have y'all back on very soon.
Yeah, I think I'm just, again, grateful. We're so grateful you guys had us on at the beginning of all this, and we're just grateful for your support and, you know, the support. We had a lot of support from Pirate Nation, just not alumni, through all this, people who are obviously sad along with us. But we're just thankful for the people who stuck with us and encouraged us. And we hope that that continues. And, yeah, to all the alumni out there, get on board, join that Pirate Club. That's your best way to support right now, but make sure you let them know when you do so that you are an alumni. And right now, the only place to do that is the comments as you sign up. So I think that's really important to show our support. We've been saying we would, so now I think it's important that we do. And I think for our girls, that's our way we can support them now as well. So, you know, I'm just thankful for you, Dave. Thank you to everyone, our committee that we work with, and especially thanks to our Wonder Women Pirates who stepped up big and saved our women's team. So yeah, thanks.
A great start to 21 after a terrible 2020 for sure, personally and professionally. They can call the Pirate Club, by the way, folks, you can call that 252-737, I have it memorized, 4540. Call it again, 252-737-4540, call up and tell me you want to be a Pirate Club member and that you definitely want to give money to help out with scholarships. This particular case for our women's team, very excited to have the ECU swim team and dive team back. How about our tennis team? Very excited to have them back. The work is halfway done, but certainly we'll have it. I feel confident we'll have the men's team back. I don't know when, but we will have them back very soon. All right, Kate, thank you so much. Good luck to you at Washington State. Love to have you back in the purple and gold. Lindsay and Randy, thank you again so much. You ladies mean a lot to me and certainly the Pirate Nation. And again, look forward to having you back on real, real soon. More good news ahead.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a great night.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. great news there. And obviously for all the Pirates, Pirate Nation, very excited. I want to bring Bubba Rosenbaum. I know he's been producing. He's a dad and a husband and working really hard behind the scenes. Bubba, thank you so much for all that you do. And we have a lot of great programming coming up, Bubba. I know that we're trying to, time has been flying. We've been having fun tonight, but certainly want to bring back one of our great sponsors up on the screen too. And for those listening, 23 Jungle Tales is Bubba's brainchild. We love our baseball program. It's a look back at some of recent Pirates and certainly some like Earl Boykin that were back in the 1960s, but it's kind of like a player profile. And we have a great sponsor, Bubba, pgxgloves.com.
Yeah, I'm very excited about our partnership with pgxgloves.com, promoting and sponsoring this with 23 Jungle Tales. You know, Dave, I was thinking about it earlier today, our first four guests on 23 Jungle Tales here in season two, we've gone from 1961 to, 2019 with as far as Trey Benton. So we span right at 60 years.
And we were just talking about, you know what's cool, Bub, about this show? I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about it. But the swim and dive team, and when it comes to them coming back with the ladies, very happy to have them back. And the baseball team, those two sports programs in our whole big athletics department have been two of the most storied programs we've ever had at the school. And so really cool that we were able to put the show together. It was not on purpose as far as the story programs, but both are rabid fan bases and certainly with championships of the like and conference championships. And obviously with Earl Boykin, I know that folks can go back and listen to that or watch that. The great job there, Bubba, with him. That was the NAIA championship, right? National championship.
Yeah, he was a member of the NAIA National Championship team back in 1961. Awful lot of fun. That's something that, I just got to thinking down through the years. Had those folks, been talked to on other shows and, platforms and so forth, and I could not recall. I'm not saying that it has not happened, but if it did, I was not aware of it. So glad that we're able to document that special occasion in East Carolina's athletic history back when it was East Carolina College, some people, they'll hear something that's that far into the past and they won't give it the respect and honor those individuals the way they ought to. And well, that was back in whatever year, 1961 in this case. But in my opinion, that's ridiculous. I mean, those folks were Pirates that's something to be awfully proud of.
Look, anytime there's, let's just put it this way. There's a lot of programs out there that wish they could say they've won a national championship and wish they had the history of our program. And I don't understand why anybody would shy away from tooting a horn, so to speak, or being proud of our history, because I know, Bubba, you and I are both history guys. So it's easy for us to do it, but it's ridiculous for anybody to shy away or act like that's old news or, that happened so far away, when that's why you're talking about how big of a program we have is the guys that came before you. That helps you have the guys after you.
Yeah, no doubt. And, we'll continue to talk with guys from a variety of eras as far as East Carolina baseball and 23 Jungle Tales is concerned. We'll hear from Tim Langdon, who was a teammate of Calvin Brown. We'll talk to Sean Armstrong, who's still pitching in the big leagues. Jeff Hoffman, who's still in the big leagues. He's with the Cincinnati Reds now after having been with the Colorado Rockies. They're really going to look forward to having these conversations with these former Pirate baseball players and taking a trip down memory lane, but also talking about and getting their perspective on everything Cliff Godwin and the current staff's building.
No question about it. And by the way, Bubba, before we go, I know we got a big show coming up on Thursday night, right?
Yeah, we caught up with Brian Kane of Peak Performance and does a tremendous job in the sports psychology side of things and on the mental preparation that goes into being a high caliber athlete. So it was a natural time to have him on, with it being baseball season, with him having just spoken to the guys and the East Carolina Pirates, that is, you know, last week virtually. He typically comes out to Greenville, but was unable to do so with the pandemic. And so we'll hear from him. If you hear this conversation with Brian, and we're going to put a snippet of it or two on our social media, Facebook and Twitter at eSportsOBJ, check that out. If it doesn't get your blood flowing, and I don't think you have a pulse, but check that out. And we also talked to him about, you know, from his perspective, talking to athletes about things they can do in those quote big ball games, to use a phrase of our friend Mark Lindsay. You know, when you have a conference championship game like you have in the NFL this weekend, or Super Bowl here coming up shortly, or in college baseball, you know, those games and moments where a trip to Omaha is on the line, how do you go about slowing the game down, and how do you go about your mental preparation so that moment is defined by you rather than defining you? So yeah, really, really looking forward to that. Dave, are you with us? I guess Dave Richmond has left the building, ladies and gentlemen. But and with that being said, let's go ahead and put this episode of the Sports Objective to bed. And we appreciate all our guests from ECU Women's Swimming and Diving, Lindsay Takunin, also Kate Moore. And then, obviously, Randy Palandro, current ECU student athlete. And then Stu Murray of College Baseball 365. And Dave is back with us.
I am. Thank you very much, Bubba. Looking forward to everybody. Thanks to all of our guests tonight. Miss Kyle, he's on assignment. I'm sure he'll be back hopefully Thursday night. And love to have our basketball team back. We'll hopefully get them back soon. In the meantime, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates!